Blog Talk Radio.
Blessed souls, here comes the time. Here comes the time of love, joy, universal understanding. As we're about to blast off into our 136th edition of Soul Class, first we want to mention that we were listening to Here Comes the Time from Rabbi Isaac Piton, from his new album, Generation Redemption. And also, I want to mention, although I'm not going to bring her on the show, this is probably the first time I'm nervous doing a show because actually I have my oldest daughter listening to the show, but I'm not going to bring her on because she didn't want to come on the show. So big shout out to my lovely oldest daughter, Chaya Mushka Goodman. Mushka, I love you. If I'm the host of the show, I can give a private message to you. Now, Blessed Souls, Soul Class number 136, In Search of Ancient Authentic Torah, number 32, Soul being an acronym for S7O, oldest, U, original, let's go back again. S7O, oldest, or original, U, universal, El Lord, the seven Noahide commandments, Shevin's Bnei Noach, which boil down in a terse definition to number one, not to blaspheme the Creator with the names of the Creator, number two, not to commit acts of adultery, three, not to commit acts of premeditated murder, four, not to commit acts of adultery, five, not to steal, six, not to eat the limb of an animal still alive, and seven, raise up righteous statutes, mishpatim, as we would call them, which are configured to normative human thinking according to those commandments of the Torah, as we just mentioned before, and we're talking about commandments which should not defy human intellect, such as giving charity, proper education, proper health and medicine, cleaning up the environment, and of course getting the whole human family, Kol Mishpachat Adama, together in one accord. Blessing is our Creator. Greetings and blessings, blessed souls. Yes, we know, blessed souls, some of you are asking, when is Soul Class going to move on past the Torah, Genesis chapter 2, verse 7, verse, quote, "Then the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul," unquote. The truth is, for the rest of eternity, blessed souls, we could vibe out in meditations of gratitude towards the Almighty Hashem Creator for giving us life, which is the greatest gift in the blessed universe. We hope to continue with this vibe, but as well to cover teachings about and from Rambam, Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon, Rabbi Nachman, from the Path of the Righteous Gentile, Compassion for Humanity in the Jewish tradition, teachings on Chabad, from Chabad Hasidus, with a special emphasis on thinking good. Meanwhile, may the Most High bless and anoint you and your loved ones peacefully and pleasantly to strengthen your connection to your divine image. Joining me now, live on the show, is our advocate, teacher and student, Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon, Dennis Ryan. Dennis, good evening, sir.
Good evening, Don. How are you?
Good. And also we have us joining live on the phone, our Noahide Chassid, Ron Williams. Ron, good evening.
Good evening, Dennis and Don. How are you guys doing?
Good evening, Ron.
Yeah, and Ron, I don't know if you just came on the show. I have my oldest daughter, Chaya Mushka, you know, listening in. So again, I'm giving another shout out to her. Don't worry, Mushka, I'm not going to bring you on the show, because if I do, I will get nervous. I'll take care of your being nervous if you came on the show. Anyway, gentlemen, you know, as I understand now, it's the halftime of the Super Bowl. And I was thinking to myself, wow, what a chutzpah, what an audacity of us to try to do a show in the middle of America's pastime. But there is a Torah concept, and I'll say it in the Hebrew, and I'll translate it to English, Todesh she'ena todeh todeh kodem, that something which is regular precedes that which is irregular. Now, the Super Bowl is only once a year, and there's been 46 Super Bowls. Well, for the past, I don't know, 16 months, we've done 136 shows, so I guess we have preemptive time to go on, and so someone shouldn't think we have the audacity to, as if to say, we're more important than the halftime show of the football game, the national pastime, or one of the national pastimes. As well, of course, the ancient wisdom we're trying to share with everyone are much older than the National Football League. So, gentlemen, as I just wanted to start the show a little tongue in cheek. Gentlemen, any reflections upon, before I go into the first segment of the show, before we go into Rambam, about the idea of thinking good. Dennis, why is it, do you think it is important for a human being to think good?
It's very important to think good because it's less time that you think of bad if you can think of good. Now, in our world on Earth here, we have lots of good things, many good things. It's far better for the mind and body to concentrate on positive, good things, because those are the things that remind us of God or close to God. So therefore, we want to have our mind occupied with good, positive things. If we don't, then our imagination, our free will start coming in, and who knows how we're going to be distracted. Now, we cannot screen all the thoughts in our head, but we can place emphasis on the good ones.
True. Ron, you as a observant son of Noah, what is your input about the process of working? It's really a divine service, meaning to serve the Most High through trying to think positive. What is your take on it, and what advice would you give to others how to strengthen their efforts to keep their thoughts positive? And then I'm going to bring in some thoughts from the Torah of Hasidus of Israel about this subject of thinking good.
Well, when I first started working with Orthodox Jews, they had a Yiddish saying, "Tzach good, sein good," means think good, it'll be good. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, when I heard that, I said, just thinking good will be good. I mean, you know, what effect will it have actually on the actual outcome? You know, this is just thought. But during the years of my studying of Chassidus, I realized that, according to the Baal Shem Tov, he said that if you think good, it actually has an effect of the outcome of whatever we're thinking of. For instance, if you think good about a person, what you do is you actually, your thinking process of that person reveals, makes a kind of a revelation within that person of the way you think of them. So, in actuality, if you think good about a person, you bring that to the, you bring that goodness of them outward, as opposed to if you think in the negative. So,
mm-hmm.
over the years, I realized that the whole Jewish thing carried a lot of weight behind it. So.
Beautiful, Ron. Now, gentlemen, and blessed souls listening out there, I'm going to ask several questions. I'm not going to provide the answer, but just something to cause us to think about these thoughts or these questions, to interact with our thoughts, and then hopefully, I mean, I you know, today my what happened. Let me just backdrop the scenario on how I came across this book, which is called in Hebrew Chashuv Tov, think good. What happened was my son, had a yarmulke, which wasn't fitting for him to wear. So him and I went to a local Judaica store in Crown Heights today, and I wanted to pay with my debit card. So the yarmulke was $4.70. So, you know, the agent, you know, kind of looked at me embarrassing, like, you know, can you pay cash? And all of a sudden, I saw this little book. It's a softcover book, and I hope it will eventually be translated into English. So how much is this? Well, it's less than $8. And so I bought it. And so for this less than $8 purchase, I want to tell you, blessed souls, that it has so many juicy points in it to demystify the thought process, to demystify the struggle that we go through, to empower us. So, but before we get into this process of hopefully being empowered by these teachings, here's some questions asked at the back of the book. And these are just questions for our thought nourishment, and hopefully in the shows we will do in the future with the Most High's blessings, we'll try to answer them. So the first question is, why is it that it appears to us that we're thinking constantly? And then the next question is, how is it possible that we can possibly, you know, have rulership or control over our thoughts? The next question, I think, which is very pertinent, and especially in the light of world events, which still need to be changing in a more positive direction, how is a good thought, how is there an ability within a good thought to actually change one's life? And the next question is another person actually affected by what the thoughts that I'm thinking about him or her or him? And next question is, for what purpose were strange or negative thoughts created that confuse us? What would be the purpose for these weird and negative thoughts? So these questions and others hopefully will be answered in this book. But again, you know, it's not the scope of this program to cover any subject matter in its entirety, but rather to open up the human thought process and soul process, intellect process, help us connect better with our divine image, our Tzelem Elokim, so we can do our own independent research. You know, in a sense, I was thinking about this today, blessed souls, that what we're trying to do is not to give you the whole picture, but to give you sort of like, give you a verbal trailer, like, you know, you there's a movie that you want to see because you saw an advertisement of it for like a minute or 2 minutes, and it's like, wow, if this is what the trailer is like, imagine what the whole movie is like. So when we give these thoughts of Torah, or these ideas of Torah, these teachings of Torah, it's not to give you the whole picture, because we ourselves cannot make any claim. I mean, I'm not a master of Torah, and I do not mean to insult Ron or Dennis. None of us will claim to be masters of Torah. In fact, we only take responsibility for our own thoughts. And if we made a mistake, we know that the Most High will forgive us, and we'll forgive ourselves, and hopefully others will forgive us. But the idea is to consider these ideas as kernels of stimulation, spiritual and intellectual stimulation. And so as we go now into this concept of what is thought, so the world of thought has a very broad scenery to it. And when you think about it, thought is something that empowers the human being to have an experience which can be above time and above space. Meaning, like for instance, I'm in Brooklyn and runs by JFK, and I think, and Dennis is somewhere in five municipalities, New York City, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. And I can now have my thought as if I'm at JFK, and Dennis can have his thought that he's in Jerusalem, and Ron can have his thought that he's now in Ireland or Guyana. Not only that, all of us can have a thought of what happened yesterday, 2 years ago, 10 years ago. Of course, all of us can have a thought for the moment that we're living in. And, of course, all of us can project a thought beyond the time that we're living in. I can think about what's going to be next week. Doesn't mean it will be that way next week. But the fact that the human being can have these thoughts and the fact that we can think about the present, past, and future within the context that our thoughts are always thinking is certainly something that should stimulate us to reconsider how profound our thought process is. Another thing I'd like to another couple of nuggets I'd like to chew on with you, blessed souls, before we move to some teachings of Rambam, is that thought is a central vessel within the parameters of what the soul is, meaning it is connected thought to the power of a person's intellect, and it is the pathway by which all of our thoughts or our ideas shall arise up into our mind. And thought is also a pipeline for our feelings. If you have a good thought, you feel good. If a person, heaven forbid, has a bad thought, they usually feel bad. Also, if we're thinking of joy, we will feel joy. And if we're thinking about being successful, we're more likely to feel that we're successful. And all different types of thoughts are connected with all different types of feelings. So by way of our thought, we can glance out on that which is called our way. Therefore, thought has an encompassing power on all the boundaries of one's life. And that the moment the person wants to ask the question, what is thought itself? Okay, hopefully this will give us a chance to actually have a profound experience of reevaluating not only just what is our thought process, what is our very life. Dennis, any thoughts on these matters? And then we'll follow up with Ron.
We are what our mind is, because that's what we compose ourselves of. Our thoughts are constantly going in and out of our head. We cannot screen all of them. They come and go. Some people have dreams at night, even though they don't want to have dreams. During the day, some people can daydream, even though they're dealing with reality at the same time. So we're in a very particular and odd situation as humans, because we don't have 100% control of our mind. We can only direct it and hope that our conscience will guide us as to what to do. Now, you can have good thoughts, but let's not confuse them with intentions, because we're always judged by our actions. You can have all the greatest intentions, all the greatest thought, and you may be, God forbid, a bad person. Yes, that can happen. And that's what the problem is. It's a dichotomy for humans that we have to decide which side of the fence are we going to stand on. And we must protect it, and we must reinforce it and remind ourselves. Why? Because it's very easy to deviate. So therefore, you may have all the good intentions and be a nasty and grumpy person, but you have good intentions. Well, we still judge people by their actions, because I don't know what's on your mind. You don't know what's on my mind. I'll give you a hint about it as I talk, but you don't know for sure exactly what's on my mind. So we have to have a little faith and belief in people, and that good is God-driven, and every positive thing will emanate from that. So we must be careful here as to how much we think we're practicing mind control when we are not perfect people, and must be reminded over and over and over again where is the straight path to heaven?
True. Ron, your take on what I just shared and Dennis's thoughts, or would you like to share any other ideas you have about your thoughts on thoughts?
You know, while Dennis was speaking there about thoughts, he made a really accurate point when he said that you know, a person can have really good intentions and still be a rotten person. And there's a saying, you know, good intentions pave the road to hell. And I see it many times. People have great intentions, but it's not implemented properly because it's not thought out properly. Mm-hmm. So, for me personally, I feel that whenever we have thoughts, of course, we have to sit through them and before we even implement them. And when they're still within us, we have full control over them. But once we start revealing them, there we lose control. So we have to maintain that we have to always give ourselves that short gap, that time frame where we process our thoughts properly before we express them either by word or deed. So that's basically my take on that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
One other thing, Don.
Yeah, go ahead, Ron. Dennis, excuse me. Go ahead, Dennis.
We must have peace of mind so that we can compose our thoughts. We don't deal with really random thoughts because then we'd be random people. Most people have a plan or approach or a methodology they want to use or follow. That's because we're fearful that we'll lose control if we do random. So therefore, peace of mind and composure of thoughts should deal with a good path, because if your conscience is strong enough, you should be able to resist all the deviations.
Beautiful. And then, as you know, what you brought up to mind, a peace of mind, you know, as much as we can talk about the wonder and the profundity of thought does not happen in a vacuum. Thought is because we human beings are alive with physical bodies. So it goes back to the basics, which we've talked in previous shows, taking care of our physical bodies. And one of my great teachers, I mean, he's a great man, he's a real Hasidic Rav, of Shneur Zalman Gafni, Shlita. He lives in Bnei Brak, Israel, and teaches in Kfar Chabad, Israel. He once told the yeshiva students, guys, and I'm paraphrasing him, guys, when you're thinking negative thoughts, if you're exhausted, forget about it. Go to sleep. Meaning, there comes a point when the human being gets exhausted, and they start, in a state of exhaustion, they can start to lose their focus in terms of trying to guide their thoughts. So a gentle reminder to everyone not to be too hard on themselves if they are going through a funk with their thoughts in a state when they are exhausted. Because when the body is exhausted, it's time to, hopefully, the person will have the ability to get a good night's sleep, or at the very least a nap or a cat nap or a power nap, whatever you want to call it, to refresh oneself. Because we also are thinking during our sleeping states, but the sleeping state has a different type of thought process, which we're not as conscious of course, as when we sleep. And even the scientists, although they can study sleep, you know, sleep is a process where we, so to speak, we'll recharge ourselves, so when we wake up in the morning refreshed, we should feel renewed, and we can start the next day with the noble endeavor of trying to guide our thoughts, therefore, and I say thoughts / part of our energy, in the right way. With that being said, Dennis, if you have in front of you Moses Maimonides, Physician, Scientist, and Philosopher, if you can guide me to what page you'll be reading from, and then we can get a little interactive if you read the section you'd like to share with us tonight.
It is page 53, Don. And
okay.
It's the general heading of Maimonides' concept of mental illness and mental health. And this particular section begins with a heading of ethical and philosophical perspective.
Okay.
In contrast to his legal definitions of insanity and his obvious familiarity with the spectrum of symptomology of mental illness, Maimonides presents a different perspective on mental health and illness in his ethical and philosophical writings, in which he is concerned with the soul, the inner essence of man, and the development of character. For Maimonides, character is the observable external manifestation of the soul in the form of man's psychological state and his actions. In the Shomanotha Parakim,
Shmona Prakim,
8 chapters in English, his introduction to the Mishnah Avot and to Hilkat Devot, laws of ethics or psychological characteristics, Maimonides presents a schema incorporating Aristotelian ethics as well as traditional Judaic sources, in which mental health is defined as the balanced middle between the extremes of any emotion or character trait, the golden mean. Illness of the soul and character is defined as any deviation from the balanced middle way. Maimonides applies the concepts of illness and health, the terminology of the physician, even his philosophical thinking. This is stated in the following Shenoth Perikim, chapter 3, and I quote, "The ancients maintain that the soul, like the body, is subject to good health and illness. The soul's healthful state is due to its condition and that of its faculties, by which it constantly does what is right and performs what is proper, while the illness of the soul is occasioned by its condition and that of its faculties, which result from its constantly doing wrong and performing actions that are improper. Those whose soul becomes ill should consult the sages, the moral physicians, and will advise them." In the Shemanah Perikim, chapter 4, he continues, "Good health, as such, as are all equally balanced between two equally bad extremes, the too much and the too little, virtues are psychic conditions and dispositions which are midway between two reprehensible extremes. Acts may include toward either extreme, in which case his soul becomes diseased. By the words of our prophets and sages of our law, we see that they were bent upon moderation and care of one's soul and bodies. If a man always carefully discriminates as regards his actions, directing them to the medium course, he will reach a higher perfection possible to human being, thereby approaching God and sharing in his happiness."
In the Shomah Perikim,
deviation from the golden mean is appropriate only for the specially pious man who uses extremes of behaviors such as renouncing particular foods, wine, or sexual intercourse as a means of restoring the health of his more sensitive soul to a state of balance. Withdrawal from society is acceptable only as a means of protecting the saintly form from an immoral society. These behaviors were strongly prescribed for the common man, for whom moderation and the golden mean is the only appropriate path, for whom ascetic or extreme actions diametrically affect the balance and the health of the soul. Maimonides in the Shomah Perikim seems to be overly attacking the form of Sufi aestheticism and renunciation of the world that was attracting Jewish adherents at that time.
Okay, beautiful. A couple of things I'd like to comment, and then Ron, if you want to comment. The thing that I found, the concept that stands out in my mind is that where you mentioned, in the teaching of Maimonides, those whose soul becomes ill should consult the sages, that's one category, the moral physicians who will advise them. So sages back in the day meant basically the rabbis, and I'm sure that Rambam didn't just mean the rabbis, but you know, because all the nations have sages. But what strikes me even more is that he called the second category as the moral physicians, as opposed to there was I don't know if there was a a lot of physicians who were not moral, but rather, I think that, you know, in order for us to seek out these moral physicians, it helps us as consumers in this modern day that we should have a sense of morality. Because, you know, I remember a couple of years ago that there was a doctor, I think two doctors, collaborated on a book on the medical care in the United States of America. And one of the doctors commented, and I wish I remember her name, I even wish even more I remembered the name of the book, said that the best ensuring factor for proper health care in America is that people living in this country start to become more aware of, in fact, medical issues. So the same thing, too, if someone was to seek out, as Rambam advises, a moral physician, one would have to basically learn about what is morality. Now, you know, morality can be human morality, it can be rational morality, it can be philosophical morality. You know, the Torah has morality, the other major faiths, Christianity, Islam, have their morality. So in order to fulfill that, first of all, again, too, if someone wants to seek a sage as well, well, what qualifies a person for sage? So I think that, you know, there's a lot being said here, because if we just blindly look into the telephone book and go eeny, meeny, miny, moe and look for a doctor, or say like a therapist for those who need therapy, I think we'll be sadly disappointed by just going eeny, meeny, miny, moe. And actually, it would well behoove us to, in this, if we were to follow the advice of Rambam, who is offering advice for a quote-unquote soul that's become ill, to get a little wisdom ourselves and to learn a little about morality ourselves. Ron, what do you think about these matters?
Okay, I have opened the Shmone Perekim and Chapter 5. And the
chapter
says here,
five, okay.
The heading is directing our powers to one goal.
Mm-hmm.
And it says here, you know, it's fitting for a person to control all the powers of his soul by his thoughts. As we mentioned in the previous chapter, we should place one goal before his eyes. He should place one goal before his eyes. Comprehension of God. Glorified be he. To the full extent of mortal potential. This means to know him. So, I haven't really gone over this in depth as yet, but it appears as if the Rambam is actually saying that, like, the tool for us controlling the powers of our soul is actually through our thinking process. And
mm-hmm.
I'm assuming, of course, the direction that follows is basically prescribed in the way in which we monitor our thinking, in terms of we have certain priorities and goals at all times, and this is what we focus on. And by focusing on this, we can ultimately control the powers of our soul through our thinking process. So I don't know if you want to elaborate a little more on this, or...
Well, I mean, this is a very powerful statement you're making, Ron, and again, you know, when Rambam was talking about the soul being healthy or the soul being sick, you know, he is speaking in very... You know, there's just so many teachings about the soul, from the Hebrew teachings, whether it be written or the oral traditions, and I'm sure all the faithful world have... You know, aside from the topic of God, Creator, probably soul, I would imagine, is probably the second most popular topic in the history of mankind, or maybe the concept of life. So let's say Creator, God, soul, and life itself. So, you know, again, I don't want to cross-pollinate different ideas from different sections of the Torah as much as I want to keep to the Rambam presentation, at least at this point of our, you know, humble presentations. So I think that though what you're giving us is food for thought. In fact, I was going to read something from the Shmona Prokim, since already Dennis did and already you did. I'll reserve myself till next week to continue to vibe out on these teachings and just suggest that we go on to the next category of discussion. Dennis, if you want to make any concluding statements, I leave the ball in your court.
Thank you. The moral question is in front of us now, and you cannot get too far away from it, because if you personally don't have any moral cloth, well, it's hard to believe you really have good thoughts in your head, because they go hand in hand. If you don't have the moral cloth, then you're not going to have a mind composed of good thoughts, because without morals, we are nothing. We have no real belief. You're as good as a tree or a branch. You need morals. That's what separates us from the animals. The morals is based on your soul, based on your conscience and your intellect. And you put them all together and you are in control. You must have some morals.
True. Actually, you know, what you're conjuring up in me, Dennis, a concept that I remember in the last couple of years, I saw a letter from the Lubavitcher Rebbe writing to someone who was complaining about anxiety. And the Rebbe talked about, and I'm speaking in general terms, because I don't have that letter in front of me, but I think I can do some justice to the spirit of the letter that the Rebbe wrote to this person who was complaining about anxiety. The Rebbe said that the human condition dictates that we have, at some level, you know, everyone has their own special connection to the Creator. And that connection is a chaining down process from the Creator himself. About him, we have nothing much to say because we talk about God or Creator. He himself does not have to have attributes. His attributes were revealed to us through the prophetic teachings. But about him himself, there's nothing to say. Yet, paradoxically, he channels down to us a loudspeaker system, a projection of who he is, something which is part of, which is our divine image. Now, when a human being is off target in terms of getting those messages from their divine image, which is a, so to speak, loudspeaker, a projector of those divine vibrations, if you want to call it, or energy, or soul force, or life force, and a person instead doesn't want to listen to those messages and doesn't want to, as you would say, live by some sort of code of morality, that it this will be a source of anxiety in the person's life. Now, when, if a person has some sort of physical ailment, or heaven forbid, we should never know such thing, say like a mental illness, a mental disturbance, you know, this does, this makes the process even more harder, because not only is it hard for them to connect in a way that most, quote-unquote, normal people do, as if there was such a thing as a normal person, but also they have also, you know, imposed upon them a certain type of disability to receive the coded message and interpret it properly. So, you know, if a person is not living the right way, they're going to feel at some level some sort of anxiety. So, again, it's basically every person, as long as a person's in the position where they have the intellectual capacity, and every person at some level, even people who are, say, quote-unquote, mentally deficient, if they are educated according to their abilities, will have a sense of right and wrong and be taught to be sharers and distributors and also receivers from other people, because none of us an island, then we can achieve some sort of balance that the Rambam's talking about in the Shmona Prokim, and as Dennis read to us tonight from this wonderful book, which I just can't recommend enough. Again, it's called Moses Maimonides, Physician, Scientist, and Philosopher, edited by Dr. Fred Rosner and Dr. Samuel Kotick, which is from Aronson Books. That being said, friends, I'd like to move on to the next section. And this is one of the 48 ways to acquire Torah. And this is based, rooted in the teachings of the Perkei Avos, the Ethics of Our Father, Chapter 6. And Rabbi Nachman, of course, we're going to look it through the prism of this Hasidic Rebbe's eyes, who lived from 1772 to 1810. And the attribute we want to try to emulate in order to make that, not just learning Torah, but to internalize it, make it part of our life, is this attribute of oev et habriyot, to love the creations. Now, Rabbi Nachman says, my beloved one, my son, which also means for daughters, that it's not possible to make an acquisition of Torah except when one loves, literally when one loves the second one, or one loves another. And not only that, that a person can become privy to learn and to take in the Torah in a continual manner when they seek out to love one another. Now, in other places in the Hasidic teachings, that why does it say to love man? Why does it say the Briyot? Well, because certain people, no fault of their own, have not been given proper education, or perhaps they got an education, but they were improperly educated, which turned them off, or perhaps something, some unfortunate traumatic event took place in their lives that they, for the time being, they had lost their faith in the Most High. I mean, I've witnessed it myself, and I cannot judge any one of them. I once met a Holocaust survivor when I was working in a what is known as a Beis Chabad. It's a center for dispersing knowledge of Judaism in Israel in the city of Cholon, which is right next to Tel Aviv. And I met my first Holocaust survivor where I actually saw the tattooed numbers on his arm. And it's one thing, friends, to see a picture or a movie or a documentary, but to actually interact with someone and see the tattoo on their forearm and hear them express their anger at the Most High, you just can't judge them because they have been traumatized. All you can do is greet them with a spirit of love. And although they're kind of shutting down, they've had imposed upon them a traumatic event that caused them to shut down their faith in the Almighty, still, we are charged, we are commanded, we are empowered to love such a person, even though in talking with them, in reasoning with them, having a cup of tea with them, so to speak, whether spiritually or physically, to love them, because in this sense, when we can do that, we will in fact have the merit to actually gain a greater love of divine instruction, because at a certain point, you know, in the laws, I'm being a little tangential, but it's to the point, there are certain laws in the Jewish tradition of honoring one's mother and father. But there can come a certain point, unfortunately, where sometimes the parents become deranged, and the law goes as far as if the mother and father come to the son who's dressed in fineries and wears, saying, like a jeweled piece around his neck, and one of the parents were to take it and to throw it into the ocean, the son is not allowed to curse or speak in a very negative way, of course not to curse them or not to hit them, but to accept the fact this is some sort of decree from above, from the Most High, that they must endure. For whatever reason, they must endure it, and you know, we can't go beyond more than what our eyes and our ears are hearing, because otherwise we're getting to spiritual guesswork, which can be very injurious to one's mental and intellectual composition. But when we can love people, no matter what they're, even if they don't display the greatest virtues, you know, when we see people that are not of greatest virtue, it's better not to talk about them, but rather to hope and pray. And as the previous Rebbe used to write, Sixth Lubavitch Rebbe, if you see someone who is in a decrepit spiritual condition, pray for them. You won't lose for praying for them. And perhaps if you help them, one day, in the moment when we need help, someone will pray for us that we should be empowered as well. Dennis, your thoughts on these matters?
Well, let's begin with Adam and Eve. They were the father and mother of mankind. So that means we're all related in some way, shape, or form. Yes, whether you like it or not, we all came from Adam and Eve. And who created Adam and Eve? The Almighty. So therefore, we have a sense of relationship to other humans. We were not built. Humans were not built to be alone on an island somewhere up in a mountain. They were built to be with other humans. And rather, I would say their communication system is like an intercom with God. We're all on this intercom, and that depends if you want to use it. Now, I'm going to disagree with you a little bit here, Don, on Holocaust survivors. In my lifetime, I've met several of them, and they've all impressed me with their thoughts on humanity. Here's people that went through hell, literally, and yet they're living as though it's something they observed a long time ago, but they're living today without relating to their hellish condition, because they have hope, strong hope than most people do, because they survived. and they're always looking for tomorrow. But every one of these people has impressed me in one fashion or another. And they are gems. But they're here, and they're living, and they're looking forward to tomorrow. I don't know if I could do that.
No, I want to be very clear. I'm not judging him. And that person that I met, it was 21 years ago. I wasn't judging him. But at the same time, too, I met other Holocaust survivors, Dennis, in my lifetime. One was actually, there were two types. There were those who were consigned to death camps and miraculously survived. And then there were others who were in work camps, who literally worked as slaves. But I had maybe five in my 49 years on this earth. The majority of them talk about that they can't get certain things out of their minds in terms of the trauma they experienced, and they talk about how they went on with their life. But there's just certain things, and that's why, they're unfortunately, this is not a secret, that there are certain conditions, unfortunately, which have been passed from generation to generation because there were Holocaust victims. And I heard a psychologist talk about this because she herself suffered from this. When they were living in their parents' home, I think in Pittsburgh, when she would hear in the middle of the night the screams of her mother, having memories of what took place several years before when she was still a year living in Holocaust-torn Europe. And also, I remember I was growing up I had a Jewish friend when I was growing up, and his mother was always afraid to take a shower. Now, I don't know if she had stamped on her arm the numbers, but I'm just saying this is something that each person who went through the Holocaust, if they went, as they lived afterwards, you might have met more people, but in general, I found that most of them, no matter how they moved on with lives, and most of them, when they came to America, were very appreciative of coming to this country and the great opportunities. They couldn't believe the freedom they've had since they came out of Europe. But still, in general, I didn't meet anyone who honestly could say like they could forget. And they felt it was a healthy process to purge themselves by talking about the type of trauma they went through. That's the point I'm trying to bring. And therefore, of course, no one can judge them. But, that was an extreme case of my bringing up the Holocaust victim that I met. But in general, people who have not gone through, quote-unquote, that type of Holocaust, many people brought up single-family homes, or homes where there's addictions or abuse, physical, mental, spiritual. And I realize this is part of the problem of spreading teachings of Scripture or other philosophical endeavors which can elevate the human condition, is that people have to go beyond their hurt. It's a very tough situation. Ron, when you grew up in Guyana, you didn't grow up, on the top of the hill in a mansion. You grew up middle class member of society?
No, I would say lower middle.
Okay. So, lower middle, there are trials and tribulations. And of course, Guyana went through a lot of stuff. It became communist during time, or was already communist?
Well, by the time I was born, we already started implementing a lot of socialistic ideas. But for us, it was just, we just suffered a massive brain drain where we just fell behind in everything.
Right.
But I wanted to address the initial question that I got lost in this the whole Holocaust thing, because I work with about five survivors of the Holocaust, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the owner's wife, she had a tattoo on her forearm. And, I saw this in movies back home. I never quite understood what was going on because, in South America, we were pretty far away from this. And, none of this, Europeans did not really come to Guyana too often. I wanted to be a communist except for the Russians. But she happened to be, sometimes I just can't believe that she was ever there, how nice she is.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot, what was the initial question again before we got to that?
No, we were talking, first we were dealing with the idea that that how we should love the creation.
Right.
People, if we see people in a lower state of consciousness, we can't be judgmental, but we have to love them. And it's better not to talk disparaging them. It's better to pray for them, for their empowerment, because at one point in time, someone might see us as being, you know, just creations, that we're not as high as we can be as in relation to someone who is of a higher level than us. And, you know, measure for measure, if we pray or we express ourselves in brotherly love to someone else, then hopefully then it will be accorded back to us in due fold by someone else.
Right. Well, I saw a program once on that, and this lady here, she said that we have two defining emotions, which is love and not really, I wouldn't use the word hate, but dislike. Like and dislike. And many times when someone does something that we dislike, we can't just go from dislike to liking them because they've done something that is inappropriate in our eyes. But there's a mediating emotion that balances these two, and that's compassion. And many times we have to go from drop from dislike to compassion to get back to that state of liking. And for me personally, compassion is always assuming, giving the person the benefit of the doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Or imagining if I was placed in his position, would I have acted any better? Or maybe this person, unfortunately, was not exposed to the kind of upbringing that would have helped him to make a better choice. And by the time you're through with this type of thinking, you can get to a point where basically you're not so you're not feeling so like upset or judgmental of that person any longer. So that was basically my take on you know looking at someone favorably and judging them in accordance to that. So that was
beautiful. Okay, gentlemen, I want to take a 2-minute break, as we usually do, because we've gotten some hot and heavy discussions, which I think is very fertile, and I hope it's more entertaining than people watching Madonna, although I think they're in the third quarter now, and I think for all of you who are interested, the Patriots are winning 17-12, so we do expect the Giants to win. Anyway, we're going to play 2 minutes of Calming Waters from Laser Brody, Rav Laser Brody's release from 2010, just a 2-minute refresher, and then we'll get back into the show. Hold on, everyone.
It's done. I have to...
Calming Waters by Rav Laser Brody from his album calming waters. And now we're going to move on to, and again, I want to remind everyone that we have about, let's see, we have about 35 minutes left. If anyone would like to call in to make the show a little bit more organic, you can call us at 347-838-8669. That's 347-838-8669. And we're going to pull out from now Compassion for Humanity in the Jewish Tradition. I'm talking about thinking good. Well, blessed souls, get ready. We're going to think very positive from these next two teachings, one a prophecy and one an elucidation for Rabbi Nachman Rezal. So everyone put on their positive mental thinking caps, because here we go. Yes.
I'm about to take off my thinking cap. I think I'm going to try that calming waters to go to bed tonight. So, gentlemen, thank you so much. Dennis, have a beautiful week, Don. Have a great week until we speak again.
Okay.
Layla Tov.
Thank you, Ron, for joining us. And may our thoughts and your thoughts and Dennis' thoughts and everyone's thoughts be in the good, just like we know they should. So, and I hope you're not sneaking off to watch the rest of the Super Bowl.
I don't quite understand football. I'm sorry. Take care.
Okay, because football down in South America is soccer as we know it, right?
Yeah, that was soccer. We did. Yeah, we played.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Be well. Bye bye.
Okay. Very good. Okay, so we're going to now turn blessed souls to the prophet Yoel. You have to go, if you want to look it up in Scripture yourself, you can see that it is written in chapter 3, verse 1, quote, "And afterward I shall pour forth my spirit upon all flesh, and all your sons and daughters will prophesy, your elders will dream dreams, your youth will see visions." And again, that's in the prophet Joel, chapter 3, verse 1. So the Metzudat David commented on that, commenting specifically on where it's written in the prophecy, quote, "I shall pour forth my spirit," unquote. This refers to the spirit of wisdom and apprehension of godliness. And upon all flesh, quote unquote, is that all the nations of the world too will discern and know the Most High. And this is also embellished, actually, in the teachings of Rambam, who the very last teaching of the Mishnah Torah talks about from the prophecy, and I believe Isaiah chapter 11, verse 9, that the world will be filled with the knowledge of the Most High like the waters of the sea cover over the ocean bed. Now, along with this idea of the spirit of wisdom and comprehending divinity or godliness, and all people will be able to discern and know God, Rabbi Nachman has a very, very pungent teaching, which I'd like to share with you all. And then Dennis, of course, I'll ask for his feedback. And it goes like this. "Although eternal life may be attained even in the present state of reality, it actually primarily characterizes the future when spiritual knowledge will increase. At that time, everyone," Rabbi Nachman says, "everyone will know God, and through this knowledge, everyone will be incorporated into the divine oneness. Then all creatures will live forever, like God, who is forever." Of course, we won't be God. We will move into a eternal mode, for by knowing the Most High, everyone will be incorporated into him as the wise man. He's referring to the teachings of the Khazari, who once remarked, quote unquote, "If I knew him, I would be him." So since we will know him, not that that's just an allegorical statement, but if we will know the Most High in terms of having knowledge of the teachings of divinity, therefore, since he is eternal, we shall be human beings moving into eternal mode. And this spiritual knowledge will be in the future, as indicated by the verses I just mentioned before, in the prophet Isaiah, chapter 11, verse 9, "The earth will be full of the knowledge of God. Because of this knowledge, nothing will be lacking." And there's a teaching from the Midrash that says, quote, "If you possess knowledge, what do you lack? And if you lack knowledge, what do you possess?" And this is also embellished in, well, when it says the Midrash, you can look specifically this up. Blessed souls, by going to Vayikra Rabbah, or Leviticus, Rabbah, in chapter 1, verse 6, or chapter 1, teaching 6. Everything will be completely good. All the nations will know God through this increase in spiritual knowledge, each person according to his own level, and to whatever extent he or she exerted themselves to serve God in this world. This is implied by the prophet's metaphor that the future knowledge of God will be like, quote, the water that fills the sea, unquote. The sea is one, yet due to the ocean's floor, it is deeper in one place than another. Thus, it shall be in the future, the depth of each person's knowledge of God will vary according to the nature and extent of his previous efforts in divine service. All of humanity will live then forever, Rabbi Nachman teaches, for the knowledge of God will be revealed and everything will be incorporated in a divine oneness. Thus in the verse, as is written in the prophet Zechariah in Hebrew, chapter 14, verse 9, on that day God will be one and his name one. So our sages of Israel have asked, quote unquote, is not God already one? But presently the blessing we recite upon hearing bad news is, quote, this is what the Jewish people have this tradition, blessed be the true judge, whereas upon hearing good news we say, blessed is the beneficent one who does good. However, in the future world, the latter blessing will be said at all times, as brought down in the Talmudic tradition, in the traditions of how to keep Passover in chapter, the 50th page, first side. This is because in the future, when knowledge is revealed, it will be known that evil does not really exist. Rather, everything is good and everything is one. Even the experience of exile is only due to our lack of spiritual knowledge. As the verse states, quote, therefore have I exiled my people who have no knowledge. And that's brought down in Isaiah chapter 5, verse 13. Excuse me. This is also why the redemption from the Egyptian bondage came to Moses, since according to our tradition, Moses was the greatest of the prophets. He personified, the aspect of knowledge. Thus it is written, quote, you shall know that I am God who brings you out from under the subjugation of Egypt, unquote. And that was written in Exodus chapter 6, verse 7. For the main redemption is attained through knowledge. And this is a teaching from Rabbi Nachman of Breslev, Lukuti Maharan, section 121, section 11 through 13, abridged. And this was gleaned for Compassion for Humanity in the Jewish tradition by Rabbi David Sears. So Dennis, I just served up a whole meal. Any comments, questions, concerns about this?
Don, you served up a 10-course meal there.
yeah.
But I'd like to get back to Joel. I have a statement I'd like to read. It's a quote from Joel. It says, okay. I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, your old men shall dream dreams, your young men shall see visions.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's talking about something that stands the test of time, of not only what people are doing today, but what will be in the future. And to say that we have knowledge and understanding of God only amounts to how much we work at it. In other words, by being on the planet, you gain an age. But do you gain knowledge? Do you gain wisdom? If you haven't worked at it, then you may not have too much of it. But that's your fault. No one's stopping you from learning and researching and thinking about things and trying to figure out things. That's up to you. But your level of understanding is very important, because it reflects on your knowledge and your wisdom. And we as humans must do better. We must try hard and do our best. That doesn't mean that an uneducated person, a person who doesn't have too much knowledge, who's only been working out in the fields or up and on some mountain, can't go to heaven like the rest of us. No, it does not mean that. It just means that your chances are better, and you'll have a better life and better understanding.
True. But again, you know, that person, you know, going back to what Lubavitcher Rebbe said earlier that I mentioned, Dennis, and recapitulating in a manner that I hope was understandable, that person, say, like living in South America or in the Sahara Desert, they have a divine image just as you and I do. And so therefore, you know, people that live out in the wilds, quote, you know, so to speak, they also have anxiety. I mean, maybe they have anxiety of a different type of anxiety. I mean, they're not, maybe they're not making mortgage payments, but if they're living in a social setting, they have their rules and regulations. I mean, if you're out in South America, probably a person has to worry about not to avoid being swallowed up by an anaconda, or to go into a certain river where they might get attacked by a piranha fish, or if they're out in the, you know, sub-Saharan desert, that I'm sure there are certain very vicious elements because it's by the you know, close to the equator. I mean, with the wild animals, with the, I mean, you know, the hyenas and, you know, tribal rivalries and all that sort of stuff. I mean, just as we have our own unique issues here living in these overcrowded urban cities in America. And with all that being said, you know, they, if they haven't interacted with these teachings, you know, we cannot, and again, this is one of the things that I'm looking forward to when we get to this universal redemption, how the Mashiach, the Messiah, not just of Israel, but the this human king shall come along and integrate into the human family all the families of the earth, each one according to their level of consciousness at that time. Because, you know, a uniform standard is very nice to try to talk about. But to implement it, I mean, again, you know, we can't expect a day-year-old child to start walking. I mean, that would be injurious to the child's health. So to speak, people are walking on the earth with their own traditions, which are contrary to what, say, like you and I might hold to be universal principles, but yet they're living at their level a moral life. I mean, I think King Solomon writes about that if the Torah, heaven forbid, would not be given, people would learn good attributes from studying wildlife. And so we see in certain cultures where they don't have access to what we would call the scriptural teachings, whether it be written or oral traditions, that they have a sense of propriety and they have their own sense of the order of creation. Of course, you and I might disagree with it. We probably would. But they as I once mentioned on a show several months ago, that in one African tribe where they had a, so to speak, a manhood ceremony, the tribal leader or chief or spiritual guide said to the young man upon turning 13, you have a brain, now you have to use it. So I think all societies, whether they're using books or not, are trying to promote the use of human intellect. I mean, I think it's just that type of common sense, I think, is accessible by all members of the human family. Your take on that?
Well, no matter where life is, it's not easy. Nobody has an easy life, whether you live on a mountain, out in a desert, or in a big city. You are human, and you're susceptible to all these forces. And you have internal forces that you have to deal with, as well as external. It is not easy. But the one thing that we all have in common is that we have to survive. And we do things for survival purposes. Some of them are simple. Some of them are a little bit more complicated. But we all must have a goal. And it isn't just to live till tomorrow. You want peace of mind no matter what happens. And the only way you can get that is from understanding God.
True. I'd like to now move on to the next section. We have about 21 minutes to go. And I actually want to end on two songs, not just one. But we'll get to that point sooner than later. We go to now the Path of the Righteous Gentile. Unfortunately, Ron couldn't join us because he is a big student of one of the authors of this book, Rabbi Yaakov Rogalski. He's been learning him about 14 or 15 years. But anyway, we'll try to do some justice to our reading of the book and our our discussions between Dennis, myself. And again, anyone who wants to call in, we still have about 20 minutes to go, 347-838-8669. 347-838-8669. So here we go in page 27 of the Path of the Righteous Gentile, and it goes like this. A person must realize that God, blessed be He, is more merciful to man than anyone or anything else can be. The Creator, blessed be He, does not conceal anything from a person which might improve his personal welfare. For man is in fact God's creation, and no one can better understand and no one can better understand how to care for creation than the original maker. If this principle applies to a human craftsman who does not create any new form but merely changes the form of an already existing creation, then certainly is true of the Almighty Creator, who brought man into being from absolute nothingness and sustains him at every instant and every second. God is all-knowing in the ways of which what is best for man, what can damage him, and what will work to his advantage. So, Dennis, rather me serve up another 10-course meal as I did before. How do we go about educating people that God is more merciful to man than any other entity in this creation?
I think most people understand that we are not perfect and that we have to adjust. Everybody needs to adjust because when you think you're perfect, you find out there's mistakes or other people will point out of it, and you realize that you don't need a crutch, but you need something else to rely on. So we have to understand, and it's inherent in all human beings, that we are not alone. We were put here for a purpose, and that purpose is to honor our Creator. And you do that by thinking about Him, by trying to communicate with Him, and yes, if you can gain some knowledge in any way, shape, or form, you will only help strengthen your own thinking, because we are what we think.
Beautiful, Dennis. Just as we are what we eat, we are what we think. So let's go on to the next teaching. And, of course, I'll take me the paragraph of time, and Dennis, I'll ask you to interact with this paragraph. One should contemplate and know that God lavishes great and abundant kindness on man. From the beginning of the human existence, God has bestowed these kindnesses even without man's being worthy of them. And it's not because God has a need for man, but only because of God's great goodness and generosity. And again, I think that people lose sight of this, especially in our modern, fast-paced, overworked, under-rested society, Dennis. What can we do to try to help people contemplate and know that we are being lavished with great and abundant kindness, despite the fact we've got a rough economy, despite there's some scary scenarios in the creation right now among the human community?
Well, one of the problems we have with humans, me and you, is that we have some good times and we have some bad times. And it evens out in the long run, but while you're going through the bad times, you don't think anybody's being too generous with you because you think your human problems are more important. There's nothing wrong with that, but you must be able to put them in perspective. You're here for the long run, not whether or not you bought a lotto ticket and you didn't win because God didn't want you to win. I don't know if God wanted you to win or not. However, you must live through tomorrow and the next day and the next day. Things just don't stop based on human thoughts of coming and going, and whether it's good or bad. We have a higher authority involved here, and that is, he's thinking about the long run, and most people realize that they're going to be here on the planet for a good period of time. In other words, the medical world is making sure that we live longer, but we also have more problems we have to deal with the longer we stay here. So we have to adjust. We can't get away from that. Every day we have to make a little adjustment or a fine tune. Nobody is perfect, and we must be reminded who we are and what we are and what are our goals. We have these goals. We don't put them up on a building. We don't normally shout them out the window. But we have personal goals of things we like to accomplish. Why? Because it gives us strength and hope as we go through life on a day-to-day basis. So we use our minds to understand what we're doing. We don't do it haphazardly.
True. Beautiful, Dennis. Okay, our third and last paragraph before we move on to the final section, before we segue out to our music, in The Path of Righteous Gentile, Rabbi Rogalski and Clifford bring down, one should also clearly realize that the Almighty Creator observes him or her at all times, and there is nothing hidden from him. All stand revealed before him. God knows whether or not a person has complete trust in him. Therefore, it is fitting that a person trust God and turn to him, abandoning ways contrary to him. And as this book advocates, and I advocate as well, that all human beings should try to observe these 7 Noahide commandments with care and deliberation, that one can demonstrate that he has complete trust in God. And then they bring down a footnote. God will then reciprocate with trust in man, leading him to success and happiness in all matters. And that was rooted in a teaching called Share Tshuva, which is literally the gateway of repentance, or the gateway of returning to the Creator, was written by the second Lubavitcher Rebbe, direct descendant of King David and Solomon. So the thing is this, is that there's two levels here. Number one is that one should realize nothing is hidden from the Creator. In fact, King David wrote in Psalms that basically the wicked think God doesn't see what they're doing and there is no judgment. The second thing is to take that trust or that belief, some would say, that God sees everything and try to connect it to positive behaviors, which we shared tersely at the beginning of every show. We advocate people do their own research, what the seven high commandments are and all their details. There are many books written about it. There's videos, there's conferences, all sorts of ways of learning more about this. That by understanding that one is being observed. Now, this is something which I think is easier to understand now for man and to believe in than ever, because of the fact we have social media, there's webcams, and people complain that the government's invading on our privacy now. Well, if human beings now can almost monitor all other human beings almost at whim, I would say how much more so it shouldn't be a matter of wonder, or even it shouldn't be a wild thing to consider. Well, who created us, certainly knew that we were going to be, and Dennis, why would you think a person would question the fact that God doesn't have the capability, heaven forbid, of knowing everything that's going on with us?
Well, too often or not, we humans think in human terms, which is normal for us. So we have a hard time understanding what our Creator had in mind, what he's thinking, or trying to figure him out. That's why we have faith and belief, because we cannot figure the whole thing out. However, we do have a communication with him to increase that faith and belief, and that's how we go through life. We may not see everything, we may not smell everything, but in human terms, God fits into the simple concept of ALL. Anything that you can think of, he is it. All is in God. We don't know what all is. We can only think of the part we can see, the part that means to us. So we must remember, it's like we know there's a dark side of the moon, but very few people have been there. We don't even know what's on the other side of the sun, but we believe that it's the same side we're looking at. When Columbus decided to go around the world in Magellan, they were worried that the world was flat and they were going to fall off someplace. They were so happy to see that they could keep on going and that there was a horizon there. These are people that didn't have any scientific understanding, but they had faith and belief. All humans have it. You must practice it.
Sure, beautiful, Dennis. So now we're winding down, and we're going to hopefully do more than a couple meditations now, of course, with Dennis interacting with myself. Meditations of gratitude, and again, these are oral tradition meditations taken out of a book called Torah Anthology, Imam Loez, extracted out of the verse, again, from Genesis chapter 2, verse 7, quote, "Then the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul." So we'll start off tonight's meditation of gratitude, although this might have a little strange taste on the palates of most people, spiritually speaking, intellectually, even emotionally, is that a person should actually meditate on the moment of their passing on. Because even if a person is strong and healthy, we still have no assurance from one day to the next. And the allegory that's given to help us better understand this, this is like a king who gives something to hold, ordering him to safeguard it as well as humanly possible, but not specifying when he wants it back. The king is merely saying that he will take it back whenever he so desires. It is obvious that the person cannot leave town, but must remain where he is, anticipating the king's command. As long as the thing is in his hands, he will think of nothing else. So to speak, God has given something for you to hold on to. In this case, it is your life and the soul, which is a part of your life. And he can ask for it back whenever he so desires. So again, this meditation of gratitude is basically that we should humble ourselves. And I think there's a saying, I heard this many years ago, live each day like it was your last. Meaning every day should be a day that if we had one more day, we would like to make it the best day, even if it would be the last day of our life. Dennis, your comments, questions, concerns on this type of meditation.
Well, I've heard that quote that you mentioned, Don, but there's a counter quote to that, and that you should live each day as though it's a gift or a present, and it's up to you to unwrap it. However, what was that, the beginning of the meditation again, Don? Oh, I know it is.
A person must meditate on the moment of their passing on.
Right. What happens is you said a lot of nice words. They're not ugly words because you didn't mention the word that the subject matter is all about, and that is death. Just as we accept birth, we must accept death. And when I met all these Holocaust survivors, the one thing I found that they all had in common, they were at peace with death. They understood it, and they were living because they knew what their end was going to be. And to me, that was very impressive because most people today do not like to talk about death. They think it's a horrible thing. Yet, we know that we can't live forever. There must be an end, and God can have an end for us at any time. We must accept that because that's part of his plan, not our plan. Humans don't have a plan for eternity. We are only participants on a trial on earth here. So therefore, we must come to face with the facts of humanity because that's how God set it up. It's not options. You don't buy life insurance forever. It always has a due date. They have due dates for everything. And our carbon forms that were borrowed when we were born have to be returned. We don't know what the date is, but we live our lives as though each day is a gift.
True. Okay, well, we'll do one more meditation, and we'll segue to our music section. I'll do a little musical tribute to Bob Marley, whose birthday as of 12 o'clock tonight would mark his 67th year since he was born in 1945. So anyway, the next meditation of gratitude is, do not let your mouth speak unnecessarily. Many words lead to malicious speech, gossip, vain oaths, and harming the reputation of others. They also lead to speaking evil of others, flattery, unnecessary hatred, and other improper things which cannot be listed in full. In general, too much talk leads to a person going astray. If you had a minute or two to advise people what they can do to reduce the negative speech.
The speech comes from your mind, and you can control part of your mind. But as we said earlier in the program, if you have some moral fiber, some moral character, you will be very careful as to what words you let out of your mouth. We can be kind, we can be nasty, but we can always do it with a smile, and we always can think of good thoughts. However, you got to remember you're responsible for the words that come out of your mouth. So don't spout them off like a water fountain or a hose spraying water. Be careful. Think before you speak.
Beautiful. So, guys, I'd like to thank you, and we thank Dennis, Ron Williams for coming on the show tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight I really enjoyed this show, and I want to end off as a little musical tribute by playing an acoustic version by Bob Marley himself. This was a song recorded, I think, within the last year of his life when his life was literally being sucked away by melanoma. And one of the things that I liked about Bob Marley is that he asked the human condition, if he were here today and I were to discuss with him, we might have theological differences. The point is, he believed in a creator of all human beings, human family, And in this song, Redemption Song, he asks the human condition, people like you and I and everyone else listening in, wherever you may be in the world, to consider extracting ourselves, freeing ourselves from mental slavery. And after that, we're going to finish off the show with Face the Truth by good friend David Dom, my brother from England, who is very good at helping us get back home to the home of our divine image, which will help us get off the scrimmage that's unintended, as we're talking about Super Bowl Sunday night, about these matters. Because David Dom is someone truly in touch with the Most High. So anyway, listen, so this is a song, Redemption Song by Bob Marley. I want to thank everyone for listening and participating, and hopefully if you can hear the archive version, please, if you like it, share it with another person. Take care, everyone.
Layla Tov. Get down to the nitty gritty. My brother-in-law asked me what was the score of what was going to be the score of the game this afternoon. 17-14. You've had some ups and downs in the last hour, huh?
They don't stop here, they're done. Well, they can always score a touchdown this next year.
How come the defensive guys are not getting to break?
Close, but they're not getting them. He's not looking at them.
He's picking them off to death here.
Get the ball!
Yeah.
How many timeouts do the Giants have?
One.
I don't know what they used to last time out for.
Look how open he is.
I know, he has somebody around him.
Oh, look at those guys. Wow.
Now, he's
a second.
No.
He had all the time in the world.
I see the problem you are the and yet they let you down.
Right, on the 11-yard line.
One last chance to score.
That's not completely true.
One last chance. This is it. They got a run the clock out.
They look tired. Look at that. Wow.
Yes.
Can the team do it? Not Eli.
Well, Eli's got a short wall. Thank you.